Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Thank you for joining us this morning. We ask that you hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour news. In the meantime, if you want to jot that phone number down, it's 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live. In the meantime, welcome our guest today. It is the final Tuesday of the month. That means in studio we have all three Josephine County Commissioners. Gentlemen, welcome to the microphones of KAJO. It's good to see you. It's been a month since we've talked. Let's start off with our chairman, John West. John, what are your constituents telling you? What are you dealing with here on a daily basis?
It's election time. Everybody's all wound up over elections. And so,
it is. Let me put a footnote on that. We are not into, for my purposes here, we are not into a political window yet, but we do ask that there's no electioneering, to the point of, the point where we would have to grant, equal time. In the meantime, I'll let everybody know that we are planning on having all of the candidates on. We'll be announcing that that schedule very, very soon. So,
yep.
Now, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead, John.
I just hear everybody's talks about all the signs going up, and but we're in budget. We're in budget talks at the county, and so a lot of our citizens are watching that and watching what's going on with different departments, and as we're seeing grants dry up and freeze up, and I brought something. Oregon paid leave program has paid out $306 million to more than 50,000 claimants in the first 6 months. They had 70,000 verified claims, but they hadn't processed that many. That would equal around $400 million in the first 6 months. So the paid leave Oregon, thank you, is what's breaking the counties and the state when you look at what's happening. And there's so many employees don't even understand about this. Wait till they do. This will be a $1 billion to $2 billion industry that I don't know how you're supposed to operate when your employees are off 12 weeks or whatever it is and getting paid, but they're not at work, but you're supposed to run your business. So,
all right. Well, we'll get into that here in a little more detail in a moment or two to find out exactly how that's going to affect both the county government and local businesses here. Mr. Bartschinger, what are your constituents telling you?
Well, of course, you know, they're still complaining about some of the marijuana activity and some of the stuff there. We get a lot of complaints about homelessness, which is primarily in the city, you know, and so we have to direct them to the city officials. A lot of, you know, even today, Chuck, a lot of people don't realize the difference between the city and the county. Mm-hmm. You know, there's two different governments there. There's city government and the county government. And so people still get that kind of confused. You know, what are you going to do about the homeless in Riverside Park? Well, you need to show up at a city council meeting
right,
for that one.
You can vote on that one.
Yeah. So we're still seeing some of that. You know, there's some people that would like to see some of our forestry roads closed because people dumping trash. But then there's a very loud part of the community that says, well, no, we don't want any gates up. We got enough gates up. So you have, and I can understand that. So there's a little bit of that feud going on, you know, and I can understand some of those people that live in those areas that have trash dumping are pretty upset about it. But you know, one person who is anti-gate, which I'm kind of anti-gate too on public lands, you know, that individual said to me, he says, why are you punishing the citizens? Why aren't you punishing the people who are dumping the trash? That's a very good way to look at it, you know. So we got some of that going on, some of those conflicts going on. Animal shelter, you know, we have such a glutton of unwanted animals in Josephine County that we are just bursting at the seams out there, and something has to be done. And so it's either create a, you know, find the money to create a new animal shelter, or hopefully that the glut of animals goes down, you know. It always saddens me to see people that, in my opinion, are kind of irresponsible, you know, having these animals, and then all of a sudden one day, I don't want them, and just take them, you know. So there's some of that going on too. So there's no shortage of strife, let me tell you.
Right. All right. Thank you, Herman. And Mr. DeYoung, what are your constituents telling you?
Go on vacation, Dan. Relax, you know, let it all wind out. No, there's just an awful lot going on. I echo what John's saying about the budget. That is probably, you know, we're getting ready for budget season. What always has surprised me, and this will be my 14th budget season, is that very few people show up to the budget hearings. You know, this is where all the money is divvied up, what money there is, and you get a real good, you get a good cross-section of how much money is available and what the budget committee is going to put that towards. And I think all three of us know that as the money dries up in different sources, resources for money, when that money dries up, the programs that it supports also either greatly needs to be diminished. That means less personnel to run them. We don't have enough money to pay the personnel, so therefore the program has to dry up a little bit or a lot. And I think it's very important. I can say it's 14 budget sessions that I've been through, and it's usually the budget committee and the presenters. You know, I don't see much of an audience there, you know, and that's pretty important, you know, on that part of it. And you're right, it is election time and all the nuances that come with elections and so on and so forth. That's another biggie. We've got a couple of things in the wind that are going to come up. We've got a pretty good size legal counsel update today with a lot of draft revisions and to Josephine County Charter and things, and mining and different things that are on there today. It's going to be a long afternoon session. And then tomorrow's weekly business session there's a lot of housekeeping on there with some advisory board people that want to come on board. But, you know, I hear, you know, I think we all get the complaints on the signs, but those are just, you know, that's this time of year. I mean, all of us have run a campaign. Every one of us has run a campaign, and you have to deal with the sign rules.
There are rules, statewide
there
rules.
There are rules, and I find it, I can just drive down any street anytime, and it's not one candidate, two candidates. It just seems like it's all candidates, and find violations to the sign rule just about everywhere. But, you know, how do you police that?
That's almost, and the key here is it's probably not the candidates who are putting up the signs, but candidate supporters.
Yeah, they're volunteers.
The volunteers who might not be familiar with all of the rules.
Yes.
I'm not making excuses. Rules are rules.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've set the scene for you. It looks like we've got a full day ahead of us here. First of all, let's go back to John. Let's talk about that paid leave situation that the state has imposed here. John, can you outline really how that is going to impact Josephine County and local businesses?
Well, I think we was told it was, if my memory serves me right, it was around $600,000 it was costing the county for paid leave Oregon. And it may actually be a little more than that. We've petitioned the state to try to get out of the program we're in. And I was reading on here that they said there's very few businesses or entities that has done their own program. Our problem is we kind of got in our own program and didn't jump into the state program when it first initiated. So our costs are higher than normal. And that was just an error that was made, by one of our employees. So, anyway, that's neither here nor there. At this point, it's just a huge cost to the county with, you know, we have roughly 450, 470 in employees. And, so we have to budget for that. We have to pay for that. We have to have that money set aside. But, you know, you take that percentage of people that could be off along with their regular PTO, sick leave and all that. You start finding out that there's a lot less people working and you still have to get the work done. So, you know, the question you ask yourself is, do we go and hire more employees to help try to take care of the employees that are off so we can get the work done? That's not in the budget. There's no money for that. And so
what is mandated by the state here that you have to follow?
The paid leave Oregon is mandated by the state. We're trying to get out of our program and get into the state program so it'll cost us less. But it's still a cost to the county.
How much paid leave?
I believe it can be up to 12 weeks of paid off. And that, like, if your wife's having a baby, you can be off to help her if she's sick, or your mom's dad's, if it's immediate family. There's some different rules and regulations to that.
So it depends on your particular situation, but a government employee with Josephine County could get up to 12 weeks paid vacation annually.
12 weeks of paid leave Oregon.
Paid leave Oregon.
That's right. That is on top of their regular vacation sick leave that they've acquired.
In addition to.
Yes.
But you have to fall into a certain circumstance.
Yeah, well, it's as you see, it's not that difficult. You know, you just can't take it off because you want to go on vacation. But, you know, if someone's, like I say, the criteria, if someone, they lay it out, the criteria. But, you know, if it's medical, those type of things, you fall into that. And then you send, it takes roughly 2 to 3 weeks, to get your process through qualified. The problem is this is just a cost that, you know, the citizens are not getting the benefit of those employees working to serve them. But, you know, the state's going to find out. You look at the numbers, you know, where, you know, part of this is paid in by the employer or the employee, but there's still a huge cost to the taxpayers, you know, through the state. And so.
The county was put into this by mistake, within the own county organization? Is that what I understood you said? Is there a way out of it, and what steps are we taking?
So we had to be in paid leave Oregon, but we didn't have to be in the program that we're in. So we have petitioned the state to get out of the program we're in and to join the state program, which will be cheaper for the county, which will save us some money. But it won't alleviate the time off.
Okay, and when do we expect a decision on that? I know the government grinds really slow. However, do we have a timeline?
We're hoping to hear sometime very soon. That's about the best. If I told you 2 weeks, it'll be 4 weeks.
I understand how that works. All right.
So, Chuck,
yes.
You know, I was in the Senate when paid leave Oregon came through the legislature, and there was no way to stop it. I mean, the majority party wanted this. One success that I have on the paid leave Oregon is I got a provision in there that it exempts small businesses with 25 or less employees, so they don't have to participate at all. So it's a statewide program, but you can option as an entity to create your own program that has the same benefits, similar. And so our former human resource director convinced us that it would be better to create our own. However, that individual missed some deadlines, and so we kind of wound up going the wrong direction. It looks like we're going to have to stay with this for a year, and then we'll be back into the state program. But I'm going to tell you something. It's a horrible program. It's horrible. The employees pay everything. Okay, they pay everything. It's another deduction out of their check. However, it's hard for a government entity or any entity, any business, to conduct business with, because they can ask for the time off and you can't confirm it. You cannot, as an employer, you cannot say, well, I want you to prove that you need this, or you're parents are sick, or whatever it is. You can't ask that.
There's no accountability.
There's no accountability. And the program's going to be, it's doing exactly what my Senate speech on the floor was, that it's going to be highly abused. And it is. So that's what we got in the state of Oregon. You probably will not benefit, because I don't think you guys have more than 25 employees.
No, we don't. We don't. Well, just under that.
Yeah. So you're not. You don't. You guys aren't in the program. Thanks to me.
No, you're welcome. I mean, thank you.
I don't know. It depends what perspective you are. But anyways, it's going to be
It all comes out of my pocket, regardless.
It does. No. It is a deduction on your check. Now you won't see it because. Yes, you will still see a deduction. The employer, your employer, won't have to contribute. You'll still see it on your pay stub, though.
All right.
But you don't get to benefit from it.
So, Chuck, it says here, the current cap for 24 is 1% of the total wages split between 60% share from the employees, 40% from the employers. Employers with 25 workers do not contribute. Only the employees do on the 25 or less.
Yeah. So I'm still getting dinged for it, and I don't get my 12 weeks off.
Have you ever looked at your pay stub?
Monthly. Monthly, I do, as a matter of fact. Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here, County Commissioners in Studio, and we'll continue in just a moment.
If you're
Welcome back, everyone. County Commissioners in Studio for this Tuesday Talk Show. I'm going to move on down the line here to Commissioner Bartschinger, who mentioned that his constituents are mentioning the marijuana grows. That's an ongoing situation here. And just observing from our newsroom here, it appears that last year the amount of enforcement was down just a little bit. And we're seeing that trend go down. Are we getting a handle on what's happening with marijuana grows in the county?
Well, there's two sides of it. There's the legality, if they're growing legal or not. Mm-hmm. But what we're dealing with is a lot of solid waste issue on these grow sites. They've brought in a lot of stuff, travel trailers and stuff like that. And so from the code enforcement side is what we're seeing a lot of. A lot of these properties have become in disrepair or kind of like junkyards, just a lot of stuff there that shouldn't be there. And so we're running into those. And you know, our code enforcement people, I don't know how they do it, but they do it. They do it. And, but, you know, we're limited on the amount of resources, the amount of people we have. So a lot of these processes take a long time, and the neighbors get very, very frustrated. You know, I mean, we may have a couple complaints on a property, and it's a year or two before we have some resolution with that property. And so the neighbors get extremely frustrated over these issues.
Okay, so it's a year or two before resolution, but your code enforcement people, how soon are they able to react to that first complaint?
Well, they react to the first complaint very quickly with a letter, but it goes on. It's a letter. If there's no response to the letter or a visit, a lot of times you can't visit. Everything's locked up, so then you have to move the whole process into the court system, and once you start that, that really drags on and on and on until you finally get a court order where you can go do something. So it's a long process, and it's a big frustration with citizens that live next to these properties. But
and primarily we're talking legal grows here. It's just the code enforcement.
Yeah. Legal grows. Whether they're legal or not, that's another issue, okay? But it's a lot of solid waste complaints right now.
Is there a way that the Board of County Commissioners can streamline that process?
Nope, you got state statute.
All right, so that belongs to the state
here. And, you know, I don't disagree with that because there are property rights. These are property rights, okay? Even though people are in violation, it's still their property. So there has to be a process. There has to be a due process, and they get their day in court. So that process takes some time. But like I said, the frustration with the neighbors is pretty high, especially when it drags on for a couple years.
Oh, well, certainly, I can certainly understand that. Yes. And there's no way to streamline it, at least from your perspective. What about courts or personnel, boots on the ground, essentially?
You can't do anything until you get a court order. So that's just – so how to move this faster through the courts, well, you try to figure that one out, Chuck.
All right. I'm going to follow up here one more for you. We talked about BLM – gates locking people out of forest land and BLM land. And this has been an ongoing problem for years already. And I know the commission has protested and sent letters. What's the status right now? And is any headway being made? Are we being listened to at all?
No, I don't think we're being listened to very well. The interesting thing with gates on forest lands and BLM lands, ever since the invention of the battery-operated Milwaukee hacksaw, that's eliminated more gates than any legislation or complaining.
It's an access tool.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So you know, it's, at the end of the day, these are public lands. And as you know, with my forestry background and everything, we're not talking about gating private lands. We're talking about gating public lands. And the forest lands that Josephine County own, it's in our rule book that we have to let people access those lands. There's, even though they're county lands, they're public lands. And so our rule book says we have to let them have access. So it's a tough deal. There's two sides to this conversation, clearly. When that individual told me that, you know, why is it always the law-abiding citizen that we go by that said, why don't we go after the people that are dumping the trash? That makes a lot of sense.
All right. Is the problem on county roads or is it on federal lines?
Both.
All right. And no end in sight? Does the county have any gates up?
I don't know. On county property?
Yes.
That I don't know.
Oh, really?
Right. Yeah. I know we put some we decommission access to county lands for vehicles, but not for foot traffic.
But not for foot traffic. All right. We're coming up to the top of the hour news. We've got to pay some bills here, and we'll continue with more of this. Danda Young's next on the hot seat here this morning, but we'll have to get to that after the news. In the meantime, if you want to jot that phone number down once again, it's 541-472-1270. And as soon as you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue, and we'll put you on the air live and let you pose your question or comment to our guest over the air. That's our situation here. You're listening to KAJO AM 1270. I want to remind you that coming up before the end of next month, we'll have scheduled interviews with all of the candidates that will be invited to appear here on KAJO Radio and some of the ballot issues also. All will be conversed right here on KAJO Radio. Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. Lines are open. The number to call, 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment to our guest today, the three county commissioners in studio. And we've had one person holding on throughout the news here. Let's see if we're still online here. Good morning. You're on the air. You have a question or comment for our guests.
Hey, Chuck. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
All right. So I had a question for Commissioner West. I'm directing this question for you. As one of the two commissioners involved in the decision to fund the OSU Extension office last year, recent information has come to light regarding allegations you've made against the office, including allegations of financial misconduct or, as it explained to me, embezzling funds. Given your past behavior for saying derogatory remarks against anyone who opposes you, can you please provide clarification regarding the basis of these allegations against the OSU Extension Office?
So as far as I know, I have never used the term embezzling funds. What my comment was the $414,000 was used for admin. And there was proof of it in last year's budget that
$414,000. Right, but isn't admin included in the measure that you all failed to read before the last decision meeting?
So it can be a part of it, but are you saying that the $414,000 should go all to admin and none to the kids or none to... the other programs.
Well, it doesn't all go to admin. $313,000 was proposed, not actual, for admin and salary. And I can, you know, I can fight you on that because $736,500 was adopted by you guys, you three, for your salaries for five FTE. $313,000 was proposed for 3.3 FTE.
So I'm not sure what the later figures are or what they have to do with the 4-H.
I'm just saying if you're going to make a fuss about salary, then you need to compare your salary for 5 FTE at that amount, $736,500, to $313,000, which was proposed, not adopted.
Yeah, so I don't know
what... Going back to my question again... I'm hearing a lot of derogatory remarks against the OSU Extension Office. What have you done as the commissioner who defunded this, and Bear Trigger, you as well? What have you guys done to get to know the OSU Extension Office and get to know what we do for the community? Or is this just a personal vendetta because there's conflict of interest with people involved in this, the separation of the 4-H and the youth and ag? What have you guys done as county commissioners, as government representatives who are speaking on behalf of the community to fix this and rectify this? Because the OSU Extension Office is a benefit to this community, and if you cut the budget, you are making a mistake.
So I'm not sure everything that you're talking about there, but I did talk with Chris.
Shouldn't you know as the county commissioner
let's,
who defunded
ma'am, let's let the commissioner respond, and you're still on.
So I did talk with Chris, the sitting person in charge of 4-H last week for an hour. I have been sitting in on Zoom meetings with them. The exact comment was between me and Chris was, where have they gotten to resolve some of the issues that has been put before them? And so me and Chris had a great conversation about that. We haven't seen their budget. We haven't seen anything. So there has been no decisions made at this point. We made a decision last year based on the information we was given, and so we'll relook at it this year to see where they're at and how much work we've gained in resolving some of those issues.
And so the meeting you're asking about, is that the quarterly meeting? Because the last quarterly meeting you attended, you were on your personal cell phone almost the entire time and didn't have any follow-up questions or remarks. So is that an additional meeting with Chris Elliott to discuss this, or?
Yes, this was a additional meeting last Thursday with Chris Elliott. We talked for a little over an hour on the phone. He asked me that if I had any questions, any concerns, to continue to reach out to him. As far as that was a Zoom meeting that I sat in the office. I was listening. I wrote 2 pages of notes down. Some of the time I had other emails coming in, and so I was just checking those emails. I wasn't just on my phone the whole time. That statement has been brought out by an employee of OSU Extension Office on Facebook, which is an inaccurate statement.
All right, Commissioner Bartschaker, your name has been thrown out here. Do you want to weigh in?
So I've been paying attention to this. In fact, I got a meeting with Chris this week. But the root of the problem started when the vast majority of 4-H kids left the program and they started their own program, and then they have their own livestock auction and stuff. And so my question back to Chris is, what have you done to get to draw those people back into the OHSU program? And they haven't come back. In fact, more have left. So that's probably the main issue I look at. I also, the budget, and I looked at the previous budget and the actuals, and the amount of travel costs that were in there was somewhat disturbing. But the root of the problem for me is, how do you get those 4-H kids back? And what, you know, what remedies? And that really has not happened yet.
All right, ma'am?
So I would challenge that and ask you, how do you know more kids have left? And number two, 4-H has done a community needs assessment throughout both school districts in this area with multiple schools, if not all of the schools, to figure out what this community needs. And livestock wasn't on the top of the list. In fact, it's more of the STEM programs, the coding, things like that. And so we are adopting programs. I'm part of 4-H. We are adopting programs to cater to these kids and the needs that the community has. So livestock isn't as important because people are changing, families are changing. People can't have, they don't have property anymore. And so I'm not saying youth and ag or livestock isn't important. It's just not what the community needs based on our assessment and based on listening to what the community needs. So we do have livestock programs. We do. But they're just not as big, and so
right, and they're not as big, so you don't need as big a
program.
If they're not as big, you don't need as big as budget. You have almost 400 kids that have dropped out. That's a lot of kids.
No,
Yes.
So, no, those numbers are incorrect. Well, we don't have 400 kids
listen,
that have dropped out.
Listen, you haven't drawn them back. They have their own program. That's how. So you obviously don't need that big a budget anymore. So
did you clearly establish that was one of the requirements
We disagree. We disagree.
Okay, wait a minute.
We disagree.
Nobody.
We can agree to disagree.
Talking over anybody is not going to get anything done. So, Mr. Bartschiger, you have the floor, and ma'am, you're still on the line. So please hold on.
So until we see some resolutions with those groups and everything, I'm saying that, you know, I'm probably not going to, I don't see how you need that amount of funding. That is a big lion's share. As far as the adult groups and stuff like that, Master Gardeners programs, I've met with some of the Master Gardeners, and I asked them the question, why should the taxpayer fund their programs? They're adults. They should. I think the Master Gardener program is an excellent program, but why should the taxpayer fund it? Why shouldn't they fund
have
their own
heard,
program? Okay, the 4-H. I'm not done, ma'am. I'm not done. The whole 4-H levy was sold about kids. Now, I reviewed what it said in the voters pamphlet, and all these other programs were in the voters pamphlet, but it was sold. It was about the kids. And I know that very well because at the time my kids were in the 4-H. So those are some of my concerns. That's my stance. And that's, and I'm going to continue to moderate this, the situation going forward. And I really hope that Oregon State Extension Service makes some headway with all those people that are left.
All right, ma'am. Final comment from you, ma'am.
Well, I just want to establish that it's not a levy, it's a measure. And if you had read that measure, it is not based just on youth. And if you read the title of the service district, it's 4-H/Extension Service District. And if you haven't heard about Master Gardeners, we have a junior Master Gardener program which caters to the youth in our community. Master Gardeners are highly involved in the youth in our community, but Extension also caters and serves to everyone in the community, young and old.
All right. Thank you very much, ma'am. We've got to move on. We have other topics to talk. Appreciate your call.
Thank
you very much. And we'll continue right after this important message.
Save now with...
Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in Progress. Ladies and gentlemen, county commissioners are in suit here. And as promised, we're going to put Commissioner Dan DeYoung back on the hot seat. And Dan, you started off the program talking about 14 years of doing budget committee, doing budget work. You're in the midst of budgets right now for Josephine community, for Josephine County. And you're not seeing any public input. Is that right? Did I understand you correctly?
See very little, relatively little. And I was on the city council. It was the city council plus eight other people on the budget committee, citizens at large. And, a couple of them would, and we, all the questions and all the opportunity to question the department heads as to why their budget is this, why it's not, what can they do to trim it down and shore it up. And it would be crickets. And then you get out in the parking lot and hear the other committee members. Well, we should have said this and we should have said that and we should have said this. Relatively quiet at a budget committee meeting. And that's always been very frustrating to me. Don't talk to me as another budget committee member or a city councilor or anything else. You're talking. You should talk to the presenters and question their motives for what the budget that they're presenting. And I found that just year after year after year after year. And it becomes frustrating. Now, this year, all three of us are on the budget committee, but then there's three at large. There's Mr. Brumback, Mr. Siebel, and Dan Mancuso from out in the valley. So we've got good representation. We've got good business sense on board there. And I hope we all have some pretty tough questions for the presenters. So why do you need this kind of money? Going back to, I'll just throw in a little something on the last topic. A lot of these costs are admin. It depends on what it is. Like, for instance, if we have veterans, and veterans need X number of dollars out of the budget, out of the general fund. None of that money goes directly to the veteran. It's not to help the veterans. It's to hire the people that do help the veteran. All admin. Every dime of it's admin. And so there, it depends on the program itself, whether it's 4-H, whether it's OSU. And there are a lot of times these things are really heavy on the admin side. That's what we need to control. Is what's the benefit versus the you know, the admin side of it? You know, we get into our own departments. We've got, you know, how many people in legal? How many people in finance? Why? Because the need is there. The need is there. The workload is there. So on and so forth. And you get back into how long is it going to take, you know, on the solid waste side. Those things really get bogged down in legal. It's a 60-day notice, then a 30-day notice, then a registered letter, then a this, then a that, then a sign, then posting, and it just goes on and on and on. And by the time you've got things wrapped up, you've got a year, year and a half just trying to get somebody that hasn't paid their taxes in 7 years to vacate the property so that we can clean it up. And then it's a mess. They always leave a mess behind. And a lot of times it's motorhomes and trailer house, travel trailers. Those are all registered vehicles. Now you're dealing with DMV. So it's a big ask. Now we're getting on to the locking the roads. Let's go back to when we didn't have trash in the mountains. Now I've lived here my whole life. Herman's lived here his whole life. John, we are all hunters. We've all hunted locally. We've all gone up to, my favorite was Foots Creek, locked up. Another one was Morris Creek, locked up. Granite Hill, locked up. Everything's locked up. Why is it locked up? Because people go up there, the citizens go up there and dump all their crap, their trash up there, and just without any kind of a conscience about it whatsoever. But why do they do that? Because when I was a young man, I used to go with my father-in-law, would go up to the dump every week, and it was a few bucks to dump a garbage can. Or it was the back of his pickup full of yard refuse and stuff. Oh, that's just dump it in. Or 10 bucks. Now you get up to anywhere. If the recycling station on Redwood Avenue, it doesn't matter. I went in there the other day with some tires, $38 later to get rid of tires. Well, now people say, well, I'm not going to pay $38 to recycle it. I'm just going to go dump it off of the log road. And that's why they get locked up, and it blocks access to people. Like Herman says, that is your land. You should have access to it. But not when it gets abused by the very people that want to use it. So it's a long thing. I don't know. Maybe another landfill. Let's find another canyon and put a landfill in here so it's cheaper to operate. But with the environmental constrictions on a landfill, I can't say that that is. We're using Dry Creek for everything right now over in Medford, the other side of White City. I think the life expectancy on that is cranking back to us really, really fast. Then what are we going to do? Haul it all to Portland? Haul it all to Eugene? We really need to look at this stuff. So do we incinerate? They have a cogeneration plant over there. They're doing everything they can there to generate electricity with burning refuse. But this is a tough deal. But like I say, I just got a quick rundown from our legal counsel yesterday. ONC, where we get our timber dollars, their lawsuit failed. I haven't seen the particulars on it. I'm on the board of directors. I'm assuming that Doug Robertson is going to put out a release to the members on the board as to what that's going to mean for our future funding. And we do get money from federal timber dollars along in conjunction with SRS. And SRS is dropping off. So that's a big resource for us that may just be going away. So I don't know. I'm at a loss. I don't see roses on the horizon, to be quite honest with you. Tough job for all three of us is saying, how do we live within our means? And I said this at the barbershop the other day, that, you know, people say, well, why? That's all you want to do is tax and tax and tax. Well, we're stuck at 58 cents. If the citizens wanted to go to $2.12 property taxes, you can't do that. You're stuck at 58. So you have two choices to fund what you are asking us to do. And it's either a levy or a district. And we put a district in, it gets contested. We put levies in, you vote no. You know, and it's what we are hearing the citizens want us to provide for them has to be paid for. And it's not going to get paid with 58 cents. It's why pay my property taxes? I want my road fixed. That's all gasoline taxes, which, by the way, everybody wants to go to, or a lot of people want to go electric cars. What do we do there when the gas tax starts drying up? It's a bad, you know, we all see it. We see the whole picture where other people living at home just kind of see one part of it. And then they go to the grocery store. And when they don't go, when they go to the grocery store, they want more money to be able to spend at the grocery store. But yet at the same time, California wants to pay farm workers in minimum wage at $22 an hour or something like that. That, see what that does to the price of tomatoes that Commissioner Beartrager was talking about just a minute ago. This is going to get crazy. And how does the sheriff say this is going to get really gnarly?
Really gnarly.
Yes.
Okay, we'll quote that. Looks like Kerman wants to step in.
Well, a couple things. First, probably 8 years ago, I gave a speech at the ONC meeting, and it wasn't very well received because I said that the ONC lands were going to come to an end, which they have. It was not received very well, and I based that speech on a meeting I had in Washington, D.C. with our senior senator, Ron Wyden. And after that meeting in Washington, D.C., where I knew that there was no possible way that Senator Wyden was going to try to fight for the ONC lands and using those timber receipts as a mechanism to fund the counties, when I realized our senior senator was not interested, I knew that there was no possible way it would survive. And so that's here we are today. We're not going to be able to use that form of money anymore. So that's just how it goes. Unfortunately, you know, 70% of Josephine County's federal lands, and we're not receiving any money off of those. So we have to depend on the small tax base. I remember showing Governor Brown once a map of Josephine County with the different colors of land ownership, and I said, there's my tax base. It's a very small portion of the county.
All right, gentlemen, we're coming down to the final minutes. In fact, I have just about 3 minutes left. John, final thought from you here as chairman.
We're headed into spring and summer, and hopefully the weather will get better. But you know, I don't know what the answers are. Everyone wants more, and we're getting less, and I don't know how we resolve that. This is a big hit on the ONC, and if we lose all that SRS, that's how we fund our DA, and part of it goes to the sheriff, and so, you know, I don't know what to say. The citizens are hurting. We just talked about fuel being high. Everything's going up, and they can only pay so much.
All right. Real quickly, I've got about 30 seconds. Mr. Beartrager.
Well, I predict that the funding in Josephine County is going to be by these levies, these five-year levies. You know, it's 58 cents is the permanent tax rate that goes to the county, but you have to also add into that we have the jail levy, the sheriff levy, the animal control levy. There's special levies for the schools. There's special levies for RCC. If you live in the library district, you pay some money. So you got to add all that in, and that's well over $3 now. So, you know, the taxpayer in Josephine County are paying it, but it's simply not enough to run the county at the expectation of the citizen.
I'm going to have to jump in here, Mr. DeYoung. I'm sorry I am out of time right now. Salute to you, sir, and to all of you. Thank you very much for joining us today. You've been listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO, Grants Pass, Oregon.